Our charge is to figure out the causes of the financial crisis. We're expressly told to take a look at any institution that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of exceptional government assistance. That's why we're looking at AIG. And we're expressly told to take a look at all the regulation of any of these institutions, and that's why we're interested in talking to the OTS, and that's why we're interested in talking to you. So we're gonna primarily focus on AIG, in fact, exclusively, after you just give me your background, just give me your background information, employment information since you got out of college, just so I have context for who you are.
Okay, I graduated from college in 73, knocked around a couple of years of substitute teaching. My BS was in phys ed, and started working for Marine Building Bank, the predecessor of the HSBC in 1975. Was there till 1980, and for about 6 months at a small commercial bank in eastern Long Island, no longer exists, Pecanic Bank. Left Pecanic and came to the Federal Home Loan Bank Board in July 1981, and I've been here ever since, pretty much.
So when you came
my
to
educational background, I got a BS in phys ed from Ithaca College and an MBA from Adelphi University of Long Island.
So when you come to the bank board in July of 81, are you the bank board in D.C.?
No, I was working for the bank board in New York City.
Okay. In what capacity?
As an examiner. Okay. And GS9 examiner.
Okay. And just take me through your... I've been an examiner ever since, or have things changed?
I was an examiner until July 1985. The bank board, the examining portion of the bank board was transferred to the Federal Home Loan Banks. So I was working for the Federal Home Bank from 19 to July 85, I believe, until 89, 1990, when OTS was created, then the examination force was transferred out of the Federal Home Loan Bank system back to the government system under the OTS. In that time, in 1988, I became a field manager. And then under the OTS, I think it was in 92, we had kind of a downsizing, RIF type of environment, and I was demoted, I guess, down to an examiner from being an FM as part of the shift that took place. Then I was moved to AIG in, I guess it was April 2004, as EIC. I was there until November 2006, came back to the regular force, so to speak, in OTS, and then in 2007, June 2007, again I was promoted to field manager.
Okay.
In the intervening years, I was promoted to GS9, I got to be GS12 by 1985 on the Federal Bank Board, and then there were numerous promotions on the Federal Bank and on the OTS.
Okay, so you mentioned that in April of 04 you were EIC on AIG, and obviously that's we want to focus on AIG. So, okay. And then November of 06, was your dealings with AIG just in that April 04 to November 06 time period?
Yes.
So you weren't involved in AIG after November of 06?
Nope.
Okay. Well, this might be somewhat of a short interview for you then. So let's do this. Describe to me your involvement over that 2.5 year time period, and then I'll ask you follow-up questions. But just tell me, give me the progression of your involvement in that time, who you dealt with, what you were finding, etc.
Well, as EIC, I was responsible for starting the exam and formulating what we would review, what people we would need, and it was all new to us. Previous to that, we had done exams at AIG, but on our own company perspective, but primarily focusing on its impact on the bank. Our perspective was to look at AIG, the holding company, and to try to understand and learn how it operated, and to look at the whole organization worldwide as best we could linking off other sources, other regulators, independent auditors, external independent auditors, and to conduct exams as best we could in our current system. It was a kind of an evolutionary process, because it was the first time we actually were in AAT in that capacity. And so our DC organization, which is the conglomerate division, was in its infancy, so to speak. So when I first came to AIG, when I was asked to come here, I was kind of reporting to the region at the same time I was reporting to Washington, D.C. It was all an evolutionary process. So our first exam or so was focused more on learning what AIG was all about. Because as student examiners, we weren't that familiar with insurance companies and so forth. And you know, this is close to a $1 trillion company, stretching worldwide. It was kind of an overwhelming type of process and objective. But we did the best we could working through it. The folks at AIG were very cooperative for the most part. There were some elements that weren't as cooperative, i.e. AIGFP. But nonetheless, we tried to do the best we could with the staff we had to get through the process. And we conducted a few exams, and even that process, our first exam was a full exam, but that through the years morphed into more of doing more limited exams in different areas and then rolling that up into a full exam.
Okay, so tell me how many, if to the extent you can recall, how many targeted reviews, how many regular reviews? I mean, we've received the exam reports, and so for example, at least on regular exams, I don't see one in 04. I see a one dated May 31, 2005, and another one dated June of 06. There was one in August of 03. What, was there a regular exam in 04 when you were the EIC?
There was a regular exam in 04, but due to the fact of our changing systems and so forth and our processes, it was decided to pull that exam down. But that exam's in my, the work papers I put up on the system, that exam's in there.
Okay.
It's a pretty straightforward exam. It's a more informational exam of what AIG consists of, different insurance companies and so forth, the different layers, how AIG was set up, different companies, with more of an organizational perspective as we learned the company.
Okay.
So it was never an issue to my understanding. It was taken off the system, but an exam was written. It didn't exist.
Okay. You mentioned that for the most part, the folks at AIG, when you were involved with them, were cooperative, but in some cases they were not, and you mentioned FP. Can you give me some specifics on that?
AIG, from our perspective, was 80% regulated and 20% unregulated. FP fell into that 20% portion. They were pretty clear that they didn't think that we really should be going to FP, that it wasn't under our purview, it wasn't part of our scope. It went as far as I overheard one employee saying that Joe Cassano felt that we were overreaching our scope by going to FP. Trying to get in there, I would characterize that I had to knock down the door in order to get in, but finally we were able to get access. And it was tough. It was we felt resistance most of the way. We weren't as forthcoming as other parts of the company were. And it was obvious that they felt that we were overreaching our scope, so to speak. But we did go up there. Originally it was Tom Kovac, and for our first go around, Tom Kovac was the lead examiner at FP in 2004 and 2005. In 2005, I believe Jim Christner was his assistant, and then Jim kind of took over once Tom was off the assignment in late 2005 into 2006. The dates may be off a bit, you know, going back a few years. But we were able to do some work up there the best we could. Very complex organization. So our first year or two, quite honestly, was focused on just learning what AIG was all about, how they were organized, and from that trying to learn what questions we should be asking and so forth, and understanding the organization as best we could.
Before you worked on the AIG exams, did you have experience in reviewing derivatives like credit default swaps?
No.
Did you look at the company's CDS portfolio in 04, 05, 06?
I think we looked at, not in depth, but not, I'll have to admit, I don't think we really fully understood credit default swaps as well as I do now, I can tell you that. And given what I know now, we didn't look at that much in depth. We focused on other transactions they had in place. FP, as complex as it was, had other transactions that they had put in place that were swaps or some sort of derivatives that in effect were really lending transactions, and we focused on those first examples so, as to what was going on. We didn't get that in depth of the swaps as we know now. We did talk to Cassano about them. We were told that they were they never suffered any losses on those transactions, that they were on triple A-type rated transactions, that AIG position was like the last piece of the transaction, and every other process would have to lose money until it got to AIG. We had that conversation with them. I remember that pretty clearly. But did we go into it in depth? No, not to my recollection.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, when you went into AIG, that not just you, but for the OTS in general, you know, that this was all new to you guys, overwhelming, different, you know, whereas before a holding company exam would be looking at impact on the Fed, on the thrift or the Federal Savings Bank, now you're looking at the whole consolidated entity. Was there any kind of in-house OTS training for this change in focus from how does the holding company just impact the thrift versus the entire consolidated entity supervision?
The best I can recall, minimal.
It was just
minimal training.
Just learn as you throw you in the pool and sink or swim?
On-the-job training. Let's go ahead.
Fair enough. Were there I you may not know this, I used to be an OTS examiner back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s. And so, of course, I remember the regulatory handbook. I mean, were there handbook sections for the holding company exam qua the consolidated supervisory entity approach, or was it still just focused at how does it impact the thrift?
That was developed, the answer to your question is yes, and that was developed while we were at AIG, or just previous to going to AIG. There was a program that dealt with conglomerates and the supervision of conglomerates and so forth. It tied somewhat into the financial conglomerate directive that came out of the EU. That was part of our relationship. We had a relationship with the French regulator who was deemed by the EU to like provide oversight to us. That's who we kind of reported to in Europe. I can't remember the name quite honestly. But that was a relationship. So the financial conglomerates directive was kind of a guide that I believe our program was based on to some extent. There was similar language involved. But was there explicit training on that program? No. I did not receive it. If there was training, I did not receive it.
Okay. So tell me then how, I mean, I used to be an EIC too. So when you're now have this new task of being a consolidated supervisory entity regulator as opposed to just how does the holding company impact the thrift, how did you scope out the exam?
Basically using my skills as a thrift examiner, trying to transfer that over as well as it could apply, using the program we had and approaching it from that perspective. That's the reason why the first exam, if you compare the first exam to subsequent exams, it's quite different, but it was focused more on our thrift perspective, our thrift organizational, and I didn't fully apply as to what we were trying to, but it was all, from my perspective, it was evolutionary. It was the best we could do at that time, given what we knew, and given our skills and knowledge, and it did more through the years. I'm sure if you compare the 2004 exam to what Tom O'Rourke produced in later exams, it would be quite different.
I understand the 2000...
It was a learning process. It was new to us, and we were learning as we went along.
Sure. And I understand that the 2004 exam was your first holding company exam for AIG, but AIG had been being regulated by the OTS for at least 4 or 5 years. I think they came in 99 or 2000, maybe even...
Right, the first holding company exam, I believe, was sometime in 2001.
So the first holding, I don't know if you heard Al, who was on detail from us in the FDIC, so he's part of the regulation brethren. So, you know, in 2001 is the first holding company exam by the OTS. So, like I said, I get that your first exam is 04, but the OTS has been looking at AIG presumably for 3 or 4 years before then. And still, when you come in, I mean, you've said it, but I just want to make sure. There is no program, whether in the holding company handbook or otherwise, about here's how we deal with it as a CSE regulator, as opposed to here's how we deal with it just looking at the holding company's impact on the thrift.
It was just being developed. The program that dealt with conglomerates was just being developed. The previous exams were focused more on AIG's impact on the thrift. Those exams were very limited.
Mm-hmm. And I understand...
They did not deal with the kind of things we were being asked to deal with.
Right, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that I think Mr. Lee comes in to head up the conglomerate program you're talking about in this 2004 time frame. Is that right?
No, that's incorrect.
Okay, tell me.
CK didn't come on the scene. To the best of my knowledge, he comes on the scene, I believe, it might be late 2004, 2005, but his capacity at that time was more as a representative of OTS in Europe. He wasn't my supervisor at that point in time. He didn't become my supervisor, I guess, until maybe late 2005, around there.
Actually, you're right.
2006.
I misread my notes. I do see him coming in November of 05.
Okay.
So then who's in charge of putting together, you know, the OTS's program for being a consolidated supervisory entity regulator in the time frame, you know, for, I guess from back when AIG became under the jurisdiction of the OTS, but at least, you know, when you're there, when you're dealing with AIG, I don't expect you to know it beforehand.
Well, the responsibility, you know, changed. I believe Kevin Anderson was involved in writing the program. He was one of the individuals involved. The person I reported to in D.C. was a woman, Carrie Walters, I believe. She was for a few years, and she left. And then in the region of the FM was Joe Keough, but he was, as we morphed into this more conglomerate type of responsibility, he kind of stepped out of the picture, so to speak, as the region did. And remember, as I said before, when we first went in, we had like dual heads, the DC responded to plus the region. But as time went on, the region took less and less of a responsibility, and DC took over more and more.
So, I mean, when you come in 04 for your first time of dealing with AIG, I mean, I'm just thinking as how I used to be a bank examiner. I mean, did you ask? I mean, hey, these guys, we've been regulating these guys for 3, 4, 5 years now, and we're a CSE regulator. Where are the procedures about how we do this?
Yes, the question was asked, and that's when we were addressed to the program that would be developed based on, from what I can read, based on the Financial Conglomerates Directive. That was made available to us.
Okay.
But again, that was a kind of a evolving process.
Okay.
It was totally new to me.
Sure. And tell me who is, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of names, but tell me who's involved in that evolving process of developing the CSE examination and supervision procedures.
The two people I just mentioned, and also Scott Alveston was an individual who was our ultimate boss. He was extremely involved in the whole process.
Okay.
Scott, Carey, Kevin Anderson. There was, I'm trying to remember, there's one other woman who also was played a part in who I did speak with quite often. The name of Luther again, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay. And I'm sorry, what was Carey's last name?
Walters.
Walters?
Walters.
Mr. Gonzalez, can you hear me?
Yes.
I had a really quick question for you. So the Financial Conglomerates Directive, the passage of that in the EU is what was the triggering event that transformed OTS's holding company responsibilities from one of looking at the impact that it had on the FSB and it to one that was more broadly like looking at the holding company across the enterprise and also looking at the FSB. Would that be a correct
yes.
statement? And when was that Financial Conglomerates Directive done? Is that in 03, 04? I can look
I
it up.
I think so.
But that was the triggering mechanism, right?
Excuse me?
That was the triggering mechanism, the FCD in Europe.
The answer is yes, but the explanation is that because of the FCD being passed and the EU's concern, and the EU felt that there was a need to have some override supervisor of a conglomerate AIG side, they asked AIG to pick who they want to be that particular supervisor. They could have picked New York State regulators, they could have picked OTS. I think there was even a possibility that even SEC could have been picked. AIG, being familiar with us from what I was told, decided that they wanted the OTS to be that supervisor for that particular purpose.
Do you know why?
That was incorporated into our responsibilities.
Do you know why AIG picked OTS?
They were familiar with us, and I guess there was a good relationship.
They had the FSB.
And that's my summation. Do I know explicitly why? No. I can only surmise that.
Okay. You know, we've seen the exam reports in the time frame that you were EIC, and I think for the most part, you know, they are, you know, they don't reflect any major concerns. Is that consistent with your recollection?
For the most part, yes.
Okay. I mean,
we looked at capital. There are some internal control issues working with the independent auditor we became aware of. But overall, there weren't any serious concerns.
Okay.
At the time I was there.
Sure. I know from looking at other documents, not necessarily from the OTS, that, you know, in the 04-05 timeframe, they were writing a lot of CDS. And I know you said that the OTS wasn't looking at that part of their business, at least in your time frame. I know they were subsequently. But were you guys, I think you guys were aware of the activity, yes?
I'd have said no.
Okay. Do you recall there being any discussion about reviewing the CDS portfolio in terms of discussions about scoping out the exams?
There was none to my knowledge.
Okay. Okay. Who else was involved in the exams and when you were EIC in the 04 to 06 time frame? Who else was involved besides you? One, in scoping the exams, and then two, on the actual examinations.
The scoping would be Tom O'Rourke and myself. And the actual examinations, our first crew was Tom, me, Mike Russo, Mike Brickman, Tom Kovac, and there was four other guys, I can't remember their names right now. Then this next exam, 2005, Tom and I stayed on site continuously between the 2004 exam and 2005 exam. 2005 exam, Mike Russo came back, Jim Christian then joined us, Tom Kovac was there again, Dean Krohn, Carl Stupski, and again a few names, I just can't remember right now. So a few other examiners were there. Then after that exam, Jim Christner, Mike Russo, myself, and Tom O'Rourke were on site continuously until sometime in 2006 when actually Tom had to leave to go to Iraq. And then there were just three of us on site. And then November I left, there were just two of us on site. That would be Jim and Mike. And Tom came back sometime in February, I believe, of 07.
Okay. So explain to me generally what kind of, you know, regulation, supervision, examination you guys are doing that are permanently on site when it's not the actual examination?
Between 2004 and 2005, Tom and I were working on finishing that report, trying to fine-tune it as best we could, and then just trying to learn the different business units in the AIG, trying to understand what was going on. If I remember correctly, it was broken down between a life insurance silo, a property casualty insurance silo, a financial silo, and it might have been a fourth one, best I recall. Because in the financial silo, you had AIGFP, you had, there was an arm based in Ohio that was involved with financing, and then we also had ILFC, which is the airplane leasing firm out in California. Then under the different insurance silos, there were numerous companies, and then that was really a bear to get our hands around, try to understand it. And a lot of times, just digging down, meeting with different company heads of each company, try to understand the operations, how they interrelated, dealing with internal orders, understand the risk management process as best we could. So a lot of work was just done to understand the company. Remember, and I can't emphasize this enough, AIG from this perspective was totally new to us. Insurance was totally new to us. We were thrift examiners, put into this new environment, and there was a lot for us to learn and try to understand.
Right,
and after,
go ahead.
2005 exam, after that exam, when Mike Russo stayed with us and Jim stayed totally with us, we started also getting involved on an ongoing basis with the focus exam, whether it be on different insurance units, whether it be on FP, we did some focus exams up there. On capital, that was a constant type of procedure, trying to understand the capital arrangements. Then under the FCD, you had this supplemental capital adequacy requirement. We tried to devise a model there to understand how much capital AIG had in different units, how it interrelated, whether it was a sufficient amount of capital. So a lot of work was done along those lines.
Okay, understanding you guys didn't look at the CDS in your time frame, did you guys look at the securities lending business when in your time frame?
No.
Okay. So again, going back to this, since I was obviously uninformed on part of this, but going back to the issue of, you know, training or holding sections of the holding company handbook on being a CSE regulator as opposed to just how the holding company impacts the thrift. After the, what's it called?
Financial conglomerates.
After the financial conglomerates directive comes down in the ballpark
03-04
time frame, is there then anything at the OTS in terms of, hey, now that this financial conglomerate directive has come down, and now that we are the CSE regulator for AIG, and I presume some other companies like GE and others, here is now how we have to change our examination and supervision of these entities?
Do you mean formal training?
Any kind.
Or do you mean?
I mean, I know about on-the-job training, as we both know about from being examiners, but other than that, you know, I mean, and, you know, doing what examiners do.
Consistent of being, like, we were directed toward the documents, reading the documents, having discussions among ourselves, having discussions with DC, to get better clarification, to understand the documents. That was the extent of the training that we received.
Okay. So in the time that you were looking at AIG, and understanding you weren't looking at CDS or securities lending that generated all those wonderful losses after you were gone on AIG, what were the areas of concern that you guys were looking at other than just trying to get your hands around this overwhelming conglomerate?
One area of concern was actually the lending unit I referred to before. Do I wish to remember the name? It was based in Ohio. They were involved in mortgages, and there was one of their subsidiaries was involved in subprime lending. And that was the issue we didn't actually spend some time looking at. Had exams, got to Ohio, and with a subsidiary that was based, I believe, in Maryland or out in Delaware. Spent time looking at the insurance companies, trying to understand the insurance companies and their relationships, and the different products that went on there, understanding of risk management as best we could. A lot of time spent on that. We did dealing with different regulators. We also were going through a process because we weren't deemed the consolidated supervisor until we did a whole process with the French regulator. We actually had to go over to Paris and present to them, show them what we knew about AIG, what we were doing in our processes in order to be designated as the supervisor for AIG. That was a process we did at AIG and also French and GE also. So even though we were there in 2004, we weren't officially designated as that supervisor for a year or two. I think we went over to Paris in 2005, late 2005, went over to Paris, I believe I remember correctly.
Did you go?
After that process, yeah, I went, yes. Me, Tom LaRoy, Tom Kovac, C.K. Lee, Kerry Walter, Brad Waring, moved to Paris for a couple of days.
Was it dated? Late 05?
And late 05, you believe that was?
I believe late 05.
Okay. And did you guys give some kind of presentation to the French banking regulators?
Yes.
PowerPoints?
Okay. PowerPoint, yes. PowerPoint, we're there for a full day.
Okay. And then following that, the French banking regulators had to consent to the OTS being the CSE?
Yes.
Okay. And they obviously did at some point.
Yes, they did.
And you know how shortly thereafter that was?
I think it was a matter of months, a few months went by.
Okay.
Maybe it was 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months.
Okay. More than
immediate, I can tell you that.
Late 05, early 06?
It probably was in 06, early 06.
Okay. I'm sure Chris can get us that information.
Keep in mind, when I left AIG in November 06, you know, I got involved in FM and as a former examiner. Given things we're going through the last couple of years, my focus has been a lot of my caseload. So AIG is the last thing I thought about for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So without refreshing my memory, going through documents, which I haven't done, I wasn't asked to. You know, a lot, I'm just going off my memory right now. So
sure.
Names and exact times and dates, it's
I understand.
Lacking at best.
I understand. And now, in terms of the concerns you had about the lending operation in Ohio and being subprime, just overall, not just AIG, but just OTS as a regulator, was subprime on the radar in the 06 time frame as a concern?
Yes.
Okay.
We actually took some action with regard to the subsidiary of, sorry, I can't remember the name, I apologize, I should have gotten that right, I can't. Nonetheless, we actually had meetings in this office, Jersey City. Bob Opens was the director, and there was action. We did actually have some action involved with that subsidiary and how it related to the FSB, because there was a relationship there. So there actually was a relationship with the FSB, with this other subsidiary, and there was action taken, and we did ask them to discontinue lending, slow down lending, which, as a side note, we did them a favor, because as you know, subprime really blew up, and they didn't like what we did at that point in time, but it saved them, I'm sure, quite a lot of money.
Right. We should see the name in the exam report, right?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Yeah, okay, so we'll see it there. Just going to test your memory now. Who were the main people at AIG you were dealing with when you were examining them?
Okay. Our main contact was Norma Vallejo. She was our go-between. She was our main contact. She worked out of their law offices there. Then above that, Benzinger was the primary person we dealt with. Then Sullivan, after he took over from Greenberg. We never met Greenberg. We did ask to meet him. We did say no customary to meet with the CEO, and it never happened. It became quite obvious that, possibly, that he didn't have any time for us. But his successor had a lot of time for us. Sullivan was very open, met with him on a number of different occasions, His door was always open, much different tactic than Greenberg had. Benson Sherman, whom we dealt with, Bob Lewis, another individual we dealt with quite a lot. We did meet with Cassano once or twice. I did meet with him personally. As time went on, FP's doors became more and more open. The resistance did go down a bit, but it wasn't always as forthcoming as the rest of the agency, AIG. We met with different heads of companies, names elude me right now, but the main people would be Benchner, Steve Benchner, Bob Lewis, and then Sullivan.
Okay, so what were you guys looking at FP in the 04 to 06 time frame?
One, just try to understand it, and understand the transactions they were dealing with. And the primary focus in 2004, as I can recall, and this is 2005, were these transactions they had in the books that weren't deemed loans, but affected because they were set up, where it ended up being financing arrangements with different entities throughout Europe and to some extent also in the U.S. That was one of our primary focuses.
Dealing with the independent auditors much?
Yes. Not immediately, but starting in 2005, we did meet them on a quarterly basis.
Okay, and that's PwC back then too?
Yes, PwC.
Okay. Any dealings with the SEC when you're regulating AIG?
No. They were not cooperative. It was very difficult to deal with them. They were not cooperative.
Were there attempts to communicate with them in terms
yes.
of...
Yes. Through Washington, there were attempts made for different information. And we got some, but it was like pulling teeth, for lack of a better phrase. Mm-hmm.
And then are you dealing with the New York State Insurance Regulator at all?
Literally. Okay. They were involved with some small piece of AIG, so there was some interaction there. There was a greater, really, interaction with foreign regulators. We actually did speak with the Japanese regulators. We dealt with individuals in Australia. We had more interaction with foreign regulators than we did with anyone domestically.
Okay, and what was the purpose of the interaction with the foreign regulators?
As I said before, 80% of AIG was regulated. And our position that we took, and based on our guidance, we were not to re-regulate the particular entity. So if an entity had a regulator in place, the idea was to leverage off of that and regulators' reports and so forth. And if everything seemed to be in order, that would be as far as we would go. So part of our interaction was to discuss directly what they found, if we could get copies of their reports to make sure to understand. Again, a big focus was just understanding AIG. I can't emphasize that enough. It was new to us, very large organization, as you're well aware of. So a lot of our focus was just understanding the interrelationships of these different entities worldwide.
Okay.
So we dealt with the regulators. The idea was that they have concerns. Was there anything they could tell us? And then from a overall perspective, conglomerate perspective, could we give them any information that could help them understand if there was something happening in other parts of the entity that they couldn't impact the entity they're responsible for?
Mr. Gonzalez, I think I understand what you're saying. I guess it's similar to the Federal Reserve's consolidated supervisory model in that they rely on the functional regulators so that not to create any duplicity there. Is that a fair characterization? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything else? No. Mr. Gonzalez, I don't have any other questions for you. Thank you very much for your time.
Very good.